Welcome to We Are The Watchers.
Tom, this is episode 172. We always have quite a lot to talk about.
Yes.
But today we're going to have to try and cram it in because we've got a very special guest
it's
a little bit later on.
It's an action-packed show.
Yeah, we'll be talking about fandoms, which you and I are fandoms in different realms of the internet and have been for years.
Yep.
And we're going to talk to somebody who knows a lot about them.
Awesome.
Very, very excited. Also excited about the fact that I have appeared in The Walking Dead, apparently.
Yes, that's where you were last year when you disappeared for a few episodes.
That's right. I was over there filming with the dog and Daryl.
Yep. Been a mysterious love interest. Possibly love interest. We didn't actually see nothing COVID.
Yeah, exactly. You and I have had a couple of little chats about this, but I think we've got a big chat coming ahead. Should we get into the news?
Yeah, let's do that. We'll come back to WandaVision and
WandaVision, of course.
Yes, plenty of news. Do you want to kick off?
Yeah, look, really quickly, I did see this story about WandaVision and that they actually had no plan B for Pietro, that if Evan Peters, I wanted to call him Peter Evans for a second there. If Evan Peters had been able to do the role, they hadn't even thought about that.
Fair. I enjoyed the troll.
Yeah, the troll was great.
Yeah.
And I like the people having panic attacks about it.
I know so many people are upset because their theories didn't pan out. And as people who constantly come up with theories that don't pan out, that's not the point of theorizing. It's just having fun.
It's a lot of fun. And I suspect maybe we can talk about this when we talk about fandoms later on.
Yeah. But look, I also saw with WandaVision that they had to scrap a lot of their plans for the finale episode because they'd filmed all 8 episodes prior before COVID hitting, and then COVID hit during episode 9. So there was all this stuff that they wanted to do. There was meant to be more with Monica Rambeau.
Mm-hmm.
And there was also going to be a sequence with the twins breaking into Agatha's house to try and steal the book and the bunny turning into a demon.
Ooh.
And they were going to have like a Goonies fight against the demon in the catacombs. And they filmed parts of it and stuff, but they didn't finish all the special effects for it and everything because it just didn't fit anymore. They weren't able to go and film the things. I believe that's why Darcy only gets one line alone inside that vehicle and things like that. She was unavailable to come back for the extra shoots because Marvel things always do extra shoots afterwards. They film plenty of stuff and then piece together the story and add what they need. So it's kind of interesting that some people were disappointed by the finale, and when you know that context behind, it actually makes a lot of sense because there was meant to be bigger payoffs to stuff they'd seeded through but weren't able to get to. So it may still come back. Agatha's not gone.
Oh, she is so not gone.
That's all it takes.
I saw Ms. Khan say that she is hoping she comes back, which means, yeah, I'm coming back.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, so that was probably the biggest little bit of Marvel news I have. The other small, tiny, it's like Marvel adjacent in that, you know that show Kim's Convenience?
Yes.
It's on Netflix. It's from Canada. It's a sitcom. I believe it's the first Canadian comedy that has had an all-Asian cast.
Okay.
I think. Anyway, the show's coming to an end. It's going to end after its 5th season. And the reason this is Marvel adjacent is because Shang-Chi is played by Simu Liu. And he is in.
Busy.
Yeah.
He's busy now.
Very busy.
And jacked, I would imagine.
I suspect that's probably why.
Yeah.
The show's coming to an end.
Greetings, subscribers and members of the Watchersville latest newsletter. Thesauruses have been flying off the shelves of local bookshops ahead of the annual poetry competition next month. Hundreds of people have signed up to create rhyming or non-rhyming stanzas, hilarious limericks and symbolic haikus. Organisers have released this statement. Oh, wondrous anticipation of the occasion that can be felt through the frustration of words with no abbreviation and audiences with no appreciation and miscalculation how the brutal devastation and humiliation of losing feels. Mr. Mellon's bookstore has another delivery of dictionaries and thesauruses arriving early next week, so first in, first served. The cool, aloof kids at Watchersville High School have started a band. Their parents are pretty chuffed to see them being passionate towards something that isn't sitting on their bed staring at their phones and shrugging their shoulders when asked about anything. Their first gig will be at, quote, someplace you don't even know and it's too hard to explain. Why are you asking anyway? It's not like you're even interested in listening to our music. You wouldn't understand it because you're lame, so whatever. Shoulder shrug. They will be on stage at 8 p.m. sharp. For the 12-year anniversary of Kanye West's I'ma Let You Finish interruption of Taylor Swift's award acceptance speech, Sally Worthington is inviting everyone to check out her Twitch channel where she will be playing it on repeat for 12 hours. At the end, she's planning on releasing her Beyoncé and Taylor Swift mashups. It should be a wild day. That's it for now. Stay safe and happy, all residents of Watchersville.
Look, I've got a lot of info about Universal stuff. Specifically over at Universal Studios Orlando. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if I mentioned this on the podcast last week, but there's been some construction happening around Jurassic Park for a while and they've not been open with what it is, but roller coaster stuff has seen going up. And last week some signage came down and people can see, and it's a new coaster called the Velocicoaster.
It's a great name.
It is inside the raptor pen.
Yes.
You're being hunted. There will be animatronic raptors through the ride.
So what will they have you on? A roller coaster where the dinosaurs are chasing you?
They haven't revealed everything, but I think it's going to be like the Hagrid roller coaster that they put in 2 years ago, which is kind of like a mix of a roller coaster and something like Haunted Mansion, where you're in buggies that turn you towards scenes and face you towards things.
Oh, right, okay, I get you.
So I don't know for certain if it's going to be that, or it's more like it slows down in certain areas and there's raptors by the side. But it looks pretty cool. Just as a roller coaster, it looks pretty cool. But I've seen a few elements where it like goes down right through cage pens and this sort of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So that's pretty cool. Even more exciting than that is that construction has resumed on Epic Universe, which is that third theme park that we've been talking about for years.
That's got a whole heap of different stuff in it. Well, rumoured.
Rumoured. Yeah. And COVID, everyone was panicked that they were just going to can it because – So construction has resumed. I imagine that it may be a little differently tiered now.
In what way?
They may not try and launch with everything all at once.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. So stay tuned on that. Huge news, exciting. But even more exciting, if you can believe, I'm about to say a lot of words that separately are pretty cool, but together is Tom.
Okay, I'll be the judge of that, being not Tom.
They filmed a movie at Universal Studios Orlando.
Yes.
While COVID was happening and the park was closed and that, but not in the park, using parts of the park.
Yeah.
A new shark movie called The Requiem. The Requiem. A Requiem is the French word for shark.
Oh, right.
It stars Alicia Silverstone, and she and her husband are at a holidaying in a villa in Vietnam when a massive tsunami or something hits and washes the villa out to sea.
Oh, wow.
He gets horribly injured and she has to fight the great white sharks that start pulling the house apart from below.
That is utterly frightening.
I am so here for this because I've been loving her work on Babysitter's Club. She has matured into – she's awesome.
She's quietly been doing stuff, you know, in the years between now and Clueless. But, yeah, this is the Babysitter's Club is the thing I think that a lot of people kind of switch back on. And we're like, oh, okay.
And, like, I love shark movies. Mm. And, like, the one with Blake Lively from a few years ago where she was stuck on the rock.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that one.
That was fantastic.
It's very stressful.
It was so stressful, that movie. I love anything like that. And seeing we don't often see an older woman in a protagonist role in this sort of film.
True.
It's a big deal when it's a younger woman. So having someone like Alicia, yes, I'm here for this.
Going along that, I know she's probably mid 40s tops, but in Hollywood, that's an older woman.
Yeah.
That's an older woman. And I kind of love the fact that we're starting to see these older women, I'm using the rabbit ears there, in roles that it doesn't actually matter the age. Yeah. And I'm thinking Rosario Dawson, right?
Sure.
In Mandalorian. And, you know, she'll get her own spin-off. But it doesn't matter. She's got the name. They're able to do this. They can pull in audiences. It's brilliant. And I hope this kind of thing continues.
Agreed.
Even Carol in The Walking Dead, you know?
Badass older lady that the age isn't
It's not a thing. It's not even a thing. Yeah, really, really cool. This one I thought about you. I saw that Sci-Fi is making a Chucky TV show. Did you see this?
Yes, I did.
No Mark Hamill this time. They've got the original
bloke. Brad Dourif is back.
So what happened with that 2019 movie?
It was just meant to be a reset. It was, okay, so original Chucky, it's never fully crystallized exactly how it started other than serial killer ends up in body of doll.
Yeah.
The Mark Hamill one, he was an AI. It was a chip that went rogue. So it was a robot thing. So that is like a reinterpretation off to the side, get fucked.
Yeah.
So Brad Dourif, he is the, he was Wormtail in Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
I'm here for it. And Devon Sawa.
Yes, he's in it.
Which,
a Final Destination flashbacks.
And Idle Hands. Do you remember that?
I remember the name.
His right hand gets possessed by the devil.
Oh, that's.
He cuts it off and then it starts serial killing all his teenage friends at the prom.
Jennifer Tilly's there as well as the.
She needs to be. She's the bride of Chucky.
Yeah, yeah. So it looks like this show, they are actually going to give you a bit of the background.
They always dance around it and stuff, and I'm sure there'll be elements, but part of Chucky's appeal is that they've never really crystallized. Like, it's just, you know, it's just one of, he's a haunted doll. Just let it be.
Yeah.
We don't need to know what the midichlorians were or anything, George Lucas. Sit the fuck down.
Oh, poor George. What else have you got?
So I know I talked a bit about Jurassic Park before, but I want to talk about Jurassic World Dominion, which is going to be the next Jurassic World film that I believe they finished filming now. They were interrupted several times by COVID. But some promotional material has started to emerge, and there are, you know, like I said, there's VelociCoaster T-shirts now at Universal Studios, but there have been some other ones for this new Jurassic World film that have kind of leaked early. And a few of the slogans on there, there's one that says, brought to you by the Dinosaur Transitional Integration Authority, or the DTIA, which you can expect to be kind of, they're going to be the pro dinosaurs integrating them. I don't remember the last Jurassic World ended with a bunch of them released on the mainland, going out into the woods. And then we've seen little shorts in between. There's one of a carnosaur and a torosaur fighting at a camp and things like that. But that integration, there's also going to be another group called the Dinosaur Protection Group, which I imagine are going to be your more left-leaning hippie types and stuff. And the one that got me really excited is Biosyn is back. Now, Biosyn means probably nothing, but in the very first film, there's the scene with Dennis Nedry and he's in the Hawaiian shirt and he's off the island having lunch with a guy.
Yep.
And
like along the shore or something,
yes,
right?
Yes. Yep. And that's the guy that gives him the can.
Yes.
And he gets the espionage rolling. His name is Dodson. And he said, Dodson, we got Dodson over here. No one cares. That's what he says. So Dodson, that actor, is back. And they're going to be so they were one of the big competitors to InGen, which was the the biochemistry and you know, genomics research unit was InGen.
Yeah.
And they were a competitor to that. So the fact that the last film ended with a bunch of dinosaurs getting loose and also the genomic sequencing auction that happened and other companies buying stuff, it seems that Biosyn is going to be making knockoff clones.
There's nothing that can go wrong with this idea.
So they've already tried splicing different things.
Yeah.
But how much further can they go? Yeah. Are they going to give something wings?
Oh.
Are they going to try and make a unicorn?
Oh, no.
Do you know what I mean?
Only like unicorn has a Scottish accent.
But, yeah, so as I said, this is a real tenuous link, but that's information coming from T-shirts, but that stuff all fills in a little bit more of, yeah, we're going to be spending a lot of time on the mainland and it's going to be about the ramifications of dinosaurs coming back and whether we go extinct.
I like it a lot. Mm-hmm. Now, you were talking about the fact that Alicia Silverstone was hanging out in a theme park, filming stuff. Well, I watched a bit of Married at First Sight, the Australian one, because it's back, right?
To get out of a head injury or something.
Yeah, it was a problem that I had it's fuzzy. But it was all filmed, this scene was filmed at the State Theatre in Sydney.
Okay.
And there were only about 5 people there, tops. And it's all because it was filmed during the pandemic, right? And I thought, this is a good use of a place like as beautiful as the State Theatre, because how many shows would they have been able to put on during that time? You know, and for I think it's Channel 9 production to go, right, can we rent this out? Yeah, for sure. Anyway, apparently quite a few shows have been doing it. Now, we were talking about, funnily enough, this last week, but the Great British Menu, Great British Bake Off, yes. I should say. I always get those two shows mixed up. They basically took Downhall Hotel and Spa in Essex, and they had their 100-member cast and crew basically just set up camp there. Some people had their pets, their family members staying with them the whole way through this latest season of the show being filmed. I know that I think it was The Bachelorette or The Bachelor, one of the two in the US did basically the same thing. Basically it went, all right, we're going to take this whole resort is ours. Yeah. And I'm like, how's that for repurposing a place that can't be used to its fullest potential?
Sure.
Great idea.
Oh, man, I hope Disney are doing that with the Hawaii resort they've got. Beautiful filming locations.
Imagine all the different things that they could film.
Yeah.
So.
Huh, very cool.
If it hasn't if it hasn't happened more, you know, and we just don't know about it, I reckon this is going to happen on a grander scale once people go, oh, we can't make our movie unless we just take this spot. So I'll film it in the one location. Like, and you know, those sort of theme parks are perfect for that because they've got all the sets, brilliant idea.
Look, I was stoked to see that there's a network in the States called Stars, a cable network and stuff. So years ago, they did a show called Party Down. Now, I don't know if you remember this one, but it had Ken Marino, Jane Lynch, Megan Mullally, Lizzie Kaplan, Ryan Quanten.
How
Martin
do I not
Star.
Know this with all those names?
This show is awesome. And they are all aspiring actors who work at a catering company.
Right.
They did two seasons of it. It's awesome and it's really beloved and stuff. And, you know, it's the Veronica Mars creator and stuff like this. So it's real tight.
Right, okay.
About 2 years ago, they did a panel, like a reunion panel, and everyone was loving it and stuff. And they were saying that they'd love to do something more. They've come out. Stars is reviving the show for another limited series.
Awesome.
But there's absolutely no news on what cast members will come back. They're trying to get as many as they can. But these people are all real big now. Like none of them faded away. They've all gone on stuff. So it will be very interesting to see how that comes together. As I hear more, I'll let people know. Because people that know this show fucking love this show.
I don't know how I don't know about this.
I really don't know.
It sounds
know
like
either.
The kind of thing that I would like.
Love.
I might have to hunt it out and watch those
It's
first
not hard.
Two
it's
seasons.
On it's on iTunes and stuff.
Oh, okay,
you'll
cool.
find it around everywhere.
Easy.
Might even be on Amazon or Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
But really good. There's a fantastic episode with Steve Guttenberg.
They're
a catering company, so they go every episode is at a different party or at a different event, and so it changes the setting and things. It's very, very clever. But yeah, they have to do a party for Steve Guttenberg and
it goes really well.
It's awesome.
Speaking of Netflix, I saw that they spent $55 million at the European film market for Christian Bale's next film, which is a gothic horror thriller called The Pale Blue Eye. And it's basically, it's set in the 1830s at a US military academy. And it's a whole series of murders that take place at this academy. And I think he is the detective who investigates the murders. Oh, also, and a detail-orientated young cadet helps him, who later becomes a world-famous author, otherwise known as Edgar Allan Poe.
Oh, there
so
you
that's
go.
An interesting, yeah.
Sure, nice bit of remix history.
Is
he in Sydney yet? Because he's in Thor 4.
I haven't.
Playing Gore the God Butcherer.
Look, I don't know about anybody else anywhere else in the world, but the algorithms on all of my social medias assume that I need to know who is in Sydney for Thor.
Well, you know they're filming pretty close to here, right?
Yeah, really close. Yeah,
really, really close. And leaked set photos nearly every day.
Every day I see them. Yeah.
Piecing together bits and pieces.
I have not seen any photographs of him though.
I don't think he's here yet. I think he might be in a mocap suit. I think it's going to be like Thanos.
Yep, yep.
If they do the modeling on Gore the God Butcher, he's almost like Gollum. He's a guy that I don't want to go into spoilers too much and stuff, but he's shriveled. He's
not your Thanos stature.
No, he's the absolute opposite. Mm-hmm. He's a little backstabber that gets a real fuck off big sword, and then he doesn't have to stab in the back anymore, and he decides to take down the gods because they didn't listen.
For a visual representation of this audio, check out the Watchers podcast on Instagram.
So the news has been flying thick and fast around Space Jam 2. I'm sure you've seen bits and pieces. There's a lot of people upset because Lola Bunny doesn't have big boobs anymore. What? That's a thing. That's very 2021. Pepe Le Pew has been cancelled. There was a scene that they had filmed where he attempted to kiss a woman's arm and she slaps him across the bar, and then he learns about consent.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
He's not there anymore. I don't know about you, but Pepe Le Pew, even watching it as a kid, he was annoyingly awkward. But that was the point of him.
I know, but he was a racist French stereotype. It's just, he's problematic. But there's all sorts of stuff that's coming to light that sounds very cool. So what happens this one is, and I don't know how the basketball comes into it, but somehow LeBron and his son get sucked into the Warner archives. So it's not going into Toonland. They're literally falling through different films and stuff like that. And so Pepe Le Pew was going to be in Casablanca, and they were going to meet him in a black and white bar in the 50s and this sort of stuff. Lola Bunny now lives on Themyscira with Wonder Woman.
Oh, okay.
And so there's rumors going that Artemis or one of the other Amazons will be in the film as well with some cameos. We already happen to know that a lot of the bad guys are horror icons from various Warner movies.
It's pretty cool.
I'm so excited for this film.
Yeah.
It's got the potential to be really crazy.
And that's what it can lean into.
It needs to lean into it because Looney Tunes don't have the same clout that Mickey does right now. They're not in constant reruns, this sort of stuff, and they are a lot edgier by nature. So make a film where they're meme-tastic the whole way through, you know what I mean? Make them really relevant for today.
And relevant for adults today because Space Jam 2, the audience are the people who grew up watching Space Jam. So just lean into that. And it sounds like, just from the bits and pieces that I've caught on with and what you're saying today as well, that's what they're doing.
I really hope Bill Murray comes back for some part.
Oh, yeah.
I hope Wayne Knight is in there.
Probably, right?
Probably. Yeah. I don't know if Michael Jordan will come back because they had Space Jam 2 ready to go years ago and he wanted nothing to do with it. And then they offered it to LeBron and he said he wasn't ready.
That's how big and famous these two basketball players are.
Yeah. And I don't think there was ever any consideration of Kobe, but like I would have loved it if there was a Kobe one in the middle. Mm. I'm just saying.
Mm. I think a lot of people would have.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm really amped for this movie. It's scratching all my nostalgia itches, but at the same time it feels like it's going to be something fresh.
Yes.
If it has the spirit of Who Framed Roger Rabbit, I'll probably sit there crying for the whole movie with happiness of just, you know.
I already know. I'm just going to be like, how many watches have you done now? How many watches? Yeah.
It's one of the movies I'm going back to the cinema for. Yeah. So I haven't been yet. I'm still holding out.
Yeah.
Black Widow is my guarantee that I'll go.
Mm-hmm.
But Quiet Place 2, I'm pretty
That'd be very nice.
Especially if I can go by myself.
Yeah.
Get the chalk top. Sit
there by yourself.
Yeah, drink and be scared.
Have you got any more news?
No.
I don't either, but I do want to talk about a show you may have heard of. It's called WandaVision.
Let's do it.
I think, as someone who, I mean, we've spoken about this before, not the biggest Marvel aficionado, but have watched, you know, watched enough stuff, have enjoyed WandaVision from the beginning to end, but I'm sure I enjoyed it more because we get to chat about it like this. I quite liked the finale.
I loved it.
I thought it was, it did everything I wanted it to do.
Did you cry?
Of course I did.
I was bawling. Bawling. Shay was as well, and Lynn's wasn't.
But the realization where you're like, oh, she has to give them up.
So I twigged to that very early on. And look, I will say I am responsible for pushing big theories and you know, is it Mephisto? Is it Nightmare?
But
that's part of the fun. And all along, it was all about her grief. And the fact that Doctor Strange or Mr. Fantastic or no man came to save the day, she pulled up her own bootstraps and sorted it out. Now, she does not walk out of that a hero.
Mm-mm.
She is tarnished. And her way of trying to make amends is to sneak off into the woods and read the evil book without any advice.
Yeah, I need to ask a few questions about that.
Yeah, I will say this.
Yeah.
I think the original plan, was that this was meant to end and Doctor Strange 2 was meant to come out 6 to 8 weeks later.
Yeah, okay.
So I feel like that is a real strong push that she may be the villain for that. Or if not the villain, or she's got to pair up with Doctor Strange because she's being hunted by Mordo, who was a fellow trainer with Doctor Strange in the first movie.
Yes.
And his whole deal is he wants to take magic away from people that are unworthy. So I reckon he'll go find Agatha, boop her on the head, bring her back, and they team up to go and take on Doctor Strange and Wanda. Maybe then we'll get the demon bunny.
Maybe. We've been teased. There's been teased. So, okay, she's cabin in the woods.
Yes.
Cabin by the lake, having a cup of tea, wanders in, puts the kettle on, then she stays in the kitchen.
Yes.
We go into the bedroom and then she's there. I was like, I need to ask Tom what this
is. That's called astral projection.
Okay.
And we've seen Doctor Strange do that several times.
Wait, so which one is the projection?
I'll get to that in a second.
Okay.
So in Doctor Strange, we saw footage of him asleep and yet himself projecting, reading books and stuff. So that's what she's learning to do from reading this book. And all sorts of stuff. She's learning magic 101 now, but unfortunately she's learning evil chaos magic 101. So astral projection is a real big part of Marvel Comics. People that are magic or sometimes psychic can project their soul, their essence, whatever, into a plane of existence that sits atop our own.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're in there, you can do all sorts of shit that you can't do here, like read real fast and implant stuff into your brain while your body is going on autopilot.
Mm-hmm.
So it felt like that her body is keeping up appearances.
Mm-hmm.
Not that anyone's coming by, and she's learning evil magic with no training wheels and no help. Is she going to try, like, and you heard the voices, right?
Yep.
Is she going to, are the voices in her head?
Mm.
Are the voices in another dimension that she's going to try and pull into ours? Is she going to try and skip over to another dimension? Because as much as she dealt with stuff at the end there, she didn't deal with anything. She walked away from her problems yet again.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she kind of dealt with some of the grief and realized she had to let go of pain, but she has not improved.
No, she messed up a whole heap of people.
You look at Age of Ultron, she tricked the Hulk into destroying a city in South Africa. You look at Civil War, and she caused an explosion that killed 100 people and something like that. Never any repercussion for her on that. Here, she's taken our town hostage for weeks.
And they were all aware of it. They were
And they
prisoners.
All just had to let her walk out, and Monica came by and going, hey, chin up, buddy.
Mm.
Do you think Monica was still being affected?
I wondered about that.
Because earlier in the episode before, she said something about, the only lies that I've been saying have come from you.
Mm.
So because we saw that she got the powers of going through the hex, maybe she's still under Wanda's influence or something.
Yeah.
Probably not. She's off to space.
Yeah, she's off to space to hang out and see Captain Marvel in the Captain Marvel sequel.
I like that White Vision, he earned the nickname Cataract. I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah. I like that conversation that
it was beautiful, wasn't it?
The Visions have.
I have to give a shout out to, there's a comic book writer named Mark Waid. Now, he's written many, many, many comics over the last 30 something years. Very, very famous guy. Amazing run on Fantastic Four and stuff. He actually wrote that scene 5 years ago or something. There was a comic where Vision met himself from far, 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 far in the future, in that Vision is the last remaining living thing.
Mm.
Everything else has died out and he's come back to try and change something now, and they have that conversation of, you may be the Vision, but you've replicated and changed your wiring. No element of you is existing within me at the moment. I thought it was amazing. In a library, such a great troll from Paul Bettany when he said that he finally got to work with somebody he's always wanted to work with.
Yeah, I was like, who? Oh, okay.
I loved it, and it's got me really excited for Falcon and the Winter Soldier and the other ones. And I mean, sure, the last two episodes were, especially the last episode was very MCU, you know, throwing throwing energy beams at each other.
We're going to have a fight up in the air for a couple of minutes.
Floating people and
stuff.
Yeah,
don't worry about us.
Very standard. You know that's how an MCU movie's going to end. They always do. You know that walking in and sit down. If you've got a problem with it, pull your head out of your ass.
Why are you here? Yeah.
They have a house style. Everything fits back into that.
Mm.
And rather than complain that the ending wasn't as solid, maybe look at it as the fact that you got at least six episodes that had a trippy like sci-fi slash sitcom element. You know what I mean?
Mm.
Most Marvel movies, you get your super fun in the second act and weird setup in the first. Mm. And we got the weird, weird fun first few episodes, then some explanation. Very tail end it had to, because this is the first thing of phase four and it's setting up Monica going to be in Secret Invasion show with Nick Fury and Talos, Ben Mendelsohn, the alien.
Mm.
It's setting up Vision for wherever he's off to next. Now, he's not confirmed to be in anything more. We may not see him for years, but we may pop up unexpectedly somewhere.
Yep.
I think that's great hope. We've got the storyline of where's Wanda going to get her kids back?
Yes.
Because she's not chasing Vision anymore.
No.
She's let him go.
She said goodbye to him.
Yep. So now she's a fucked up parent.
Yeah.
And as a parent, I can really relate to that. Of you sit there and it was really conflicting. Like, it's not smart what she's doing, but I looked at it as a parent of like, yeah, you would do that instantly. You'd start looking for your kids.
Mm.
You know, and there's all these awesome storylines. Jimmy Woo looks like he's getting a promotion. He needs a show or to just appear in most of the TV shows as the Link. I would happily have him as the new Phil Coulson.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Have him directing S.W.O.R.D. or whatever government representative there is, and he likes working with the heroes.
That's nice.
So much came out of that episode.
Yep.
That it was, like, even though it was called series finale, it had a lot of legwork to do to set up the rest of phase four.
Mm.
And it did a good job.
I think so.
Yeah.
There was enough that made me go, open-ended. Yeah. Love this. Finish, but open-ended. Yeah, brilliant. Let's talk about The Walking Dead.
Yep, let's do it.
Become a watcher on Facebook. Facebook.com/WeAreTheWatchers.
This is the episode where halfway through I went, oh, they're setting up the Daryl and Carol spin-off show. This is what's happening here.
That was a pretty, I was bored. I have to say, like, I gave him a lot of leeway last week. It was like, good to have him back. But Daryl shouldn't talk a whole lot. He's very beautiful when he's quiet.
I liked that we both said that Norman Reedus wasn't able to do the Daryl voice the whole way through that. It was slipped. Just the Norman Reedus voice.
So there was only three characters in the episode and only ever two at a time. We didn't actually see anyone touch a zombie. COVID.
Mm.
Yeah, it was all very creative editing and stuff again. And I read a bit of an interview that Norman Reedus was very apprehensive about this episode, not too much into the idea of it, because he's fought for 10 seasons for Daryl to have no love interest.
Mm.
He likes the fact that Daryl is a cipher and everyone can project their own feelings onto him. So there's a lot of people that are asexual or homosexual that have really related to his character and enjoyed him there. And we didn't see him hook up with you.
Yeah, with me, Leah. But there was definitely a connection there, and the way that particularly she acted towards him in the later half of that episode definitely felt like there was a relationship that had happened.
We didn't hear him once do like a meh.
Mm-mm.
There was none of that. Like he just warmed to her so quickly, and that's not how they're on it. Especially when he's alone in the woods for 5 years.
Which he was loving.
And you can't be like, oh, he just wanted a bit of tail, because he's shown no interest in getting tail at any time before.
No, this very much was a decision for them to change his character.
For the new show.
For the new show, because obviously they're going to go and find Leah, right? Yeah. That's what the show is.
Yeah, maybe Dwight will come back and it'll just be two guys searching for their gals.
And Heath comes along as well. He's like, yo, Heath. I've got to pull that name out every now and then.
You do,
like,
well done.
Also, I did see a photograph of him the other day.
What, back, like, on the set?
No. It was an old group shot of the cast, and I think it was like early Jesus days, and I went, oh, Heath, that's right. You had that wig on. So, yeah, this episode I don't think was what I wanted, but I understood what it was for.
The last time we had a real Carol and Daryl only episode was back in, I want to say season 5, where they went searching for Beth in the city.
Mm-hmm.
And they hid out in a clinic or something at night, and they had real frank conversations. They bunk bedded up and stuff, and it was a real will they, won't they? Mm. And they won't.
If they do, it's ruined.
Yeah. But yeah this was fucking COVID.
What do you think though? Are you excited for, I don't even know if it's next week or not, but the Negan one?
I think they'll hold Negan for a bit because that's going to be a big ratings pop for them.
Mm.
I think it'd be good.
You've been watching a few docos this week.
I have. Look, I've watched 2 docos and I'm going to smush them together.
Perfect.
The first one I watched was called The Last Blockbuster, and it was a doco about
Blockbuster Video.
The very last Blockbuster Video, uh-huh, which is in Bend, Oregon in the States. And as you would imagine, they have memorabilia and you can buy T-shirts and things, and that's helping them stay afloat. But it follows them across the last kind of 3 years as the other Blockbusters started to fall away. I mean, plenty had gone before then, but when it got down to the last 20, 16, 8, 4, them and stuff. And it was, look, lots of great filmmakers and actors and things are involved in this, in the doco, and they talk on camera, and they almost all to a point, or any of them who go in there go, oh, I forgot the smell.
Oh, really?
Yep. Because there's that smell of super clean plastic, and like someone sits there just clicking a VHS case open, closed, and you're like, oh, that sound.
I remember that sound.
So it made me really, really nostalgic for it. I quite enjoyed it. I highly recommend it. If anyone sort of 30 or older, I think will really, really connect with this film. If you used to ever spend at least half an hour searching for a film, doing the walk and checking and seeing what one you think you should take home.
Mm.
Just take the one.
Mm-hmm.
Really solid, highly recommended. The other one I watched was called The Orange Years, The Nickelodeon Story. And it's a documentary about the beginning of Nickelodeon in the States. And it's all very interesting of how they kind of infused a bit of an MTV mindset behind things, but also really, really frank conversations with kids to help them find out stuff that they could come from a different angle. And like one of the biggest insights they had was that as a kid, you're always lonely. You might be around other people, but you don't understand social connection properly and things like that. So you've kind of got this disconnect. You always feel like an outsider. So making shows like, you know, Ren and Stimpy, which was completely different to the rest of the animation world, or Doug, which is about a sweet boy trying to interact with people who aren't quite as sweet and things like that. You can kind of go through everything they did and it seems to fit. Other great observations, like Clarissa Explains It All with Melissa Joan Hart, talking about how, you know, she'd been in for a few auditions, and in one of them, the executive producer said, so what do you think about New Kids on the Block? And she, not even thinking, just went, ugh. He went, really? What sort of music are you into? And she's like, oh, They Might Be Giants.
Yeah, right.
Ween.
Yeah, right. And then
instantly that was the character.
Right.
They knew where they were going with the character. And so her best friend is the boy who sneaks in through the window all the time. No romantic interest. They would never hook up.
Yep.
The whole point of the window thing was an insight they found of kids need a connection with someone that's not via their family. So by having someone who sneaks in through the bedroom window,
there's no connection
to the family.
That's
really,
very
really intelligent little insights through there. A brilliant section about when they started Nick News and how they did an interview with Magic Johnson not long after he'd come out with HIV, being HIV positive. And that had me I was all the feels. How they handle that with children. Oh.
Did they, okay, so that would have been in the 80s.
Yeah.
Did they talk at all about one of my favorite childhood shows, You Can't Do That on Television?
So much. They even tell you what the thing is that they throw on the fire to make it. I'm not saying. You got to watch.
Did they talk to castmates?
Yeah. Like half of them are there.
Alistair?
Yep. Yep. So you've got, it goes through the beginning stuff of lots of game shows that they were buying from elsewhere and then they could start producing their own. So you get your Double Dare, Legend of the Hidden Temple, and Adventures of Pete and Pete, Clarissa Explains It
great
All.
Great shows.
Adventures of Alex Mack.
Yes.
All That.
Oh, All That.
Yeah. Keenan and Kel.
Well, that's what they were from, right?
Mm-hmm. Just all of these great shows from back there, and they explain why they pressed the button to go on that. And each of them has one sentence of what it represented for the Nickelodeon brand that makes you go, yep, okay, yep. Brilliant. I loved this documentary.
This sounds really... What, it's, orange
it's
for
called the orange. Yes, the oranges. The and they talk about why they picked that orange because nothing else is that
yeah,
orange.
Yeah, okay.
And like the MTV logo where they could graffiti it or put it in different realms mm-hmm. by picking that color, all they needed to do was have that color and a bit of splat at somewhere mm-hmm. and it always symbolized Nickelodeon, no matter whether it was a plane or a teddy bear or GAC or whatever, that orange Pantone, I think it's like 021 or something like that. They even say what it is in this. They trademarked that. The same way Dairy Milk have got their purple.
Yeah.
Really brilliant. And then it doesn't go much further. It kind of gets up to SpongeBob and Dora the Explorer. Mm-hmm. And then there's a very brief bit about how, the same with any company, once you find that much success, financial success, you can't go back to being creatively driven. And so it talks about how basically the merchandising of Dora and the insane success of SpongeBob killed the punk rock anarchy vibe that they had back in the day, because all of a sudden they were owned and producing things for children.
Yeah, it's different now, isn't it? Yeah, it's a slightly younger.
So I highly recommend that one as well.
That sounds cool.
Yeah.
That's a whole heap of shows that I loved growing up.
It's just, it tickled every, and like they got both Pete and Pete back, and Larissa Alaniak was talking about Alex Mack. They got Melissa Joan Hart talking about Clarissa. All of the hosts from the different game shows and stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
And Keenan's on there, and everyone else is sitting forward, exciting, talking about stuff. And Keenan is back, really relaxed in
a
chair.
He's the man.
He's on SNL all the way. He's not fussed about the camera. Yeah. Even Kel has a bit, like, I got a lot of time for Kel. And it kind of shows that it's weird that Keenan got so popular and big afterwards, because back in the day, Keenan felt he lived in Kel's shadow. He was that's the funny guy.
He was the funny guy. He was the louder of the two of them. Would be more, I don't know if more willing is the word, because I don't know behind the scenes, but appeared to be more willing to do the really stupid stuff.
He talks about how he came up with the good burger voice. And I won't spoil that story. It was pretty good. But yeah, it is just that sort of situation of him vibing.
I so want to watch this.
You'll love it.
This is it.
Acme's number two customers, right behind Wile E. Coyote. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
Tom, I did promise, well, we both did promise that we were going to have a very special guest on.
Yes.
The back half of the podcast. And I'm going to say your name in the Australian and the American way, right? So I'm first going to say Tara Jabari, otherwise known as Tara Jabari. How you doing?
Yes. Good. How are you?
Very, very well. Thank you. We wanted to have you on because we know that you're an aficionado of all things fandom in the digital, well, I was going to say medium, but age, like internet, all that kind of stuff.
Digital media and digital age.
Sure.
Because it's not just the internet necessarily through a computer, especially with our phones. Mm-hmm. So, and then you got podcasts, you got photographs, you've got GIFs or GIFs and stuff. So I just say digital media.
QR codes, weren't they a thing?
Yes, especially now with restaurants too.
Yeah, absolutely. And also you've got your own podcast, which is a bit different as well, called Who Was She?
Yeah, it's a biographical podcast that I try and share the stories of women throughout history that I learned about. This first season is about Lydia Zemanoff, who was the daughter of the guy who invented the language Esperanto. And it was their hope that if we could speak all the same language, then a lot of the world's problems would go away. Dr. Esperanto invented it right before World War I. And then he died. And then his daughter, Lydia, traveled through three continents. She went to Palestine. She went to the United States and lots of places in Europe. They're from Poland, to teach the language. And then she died in World War II. But there were many chances and trials of trying to get her to get out of the Warsaw ghetto and stuff. And so I was like, this is what movies are made of. Mm-hmm. But no one was going to make the movie. So I thought, let's make it into a podcast. And it's opened my eyes to so many different people. And I wanted it to be niche enough so I'm not overwhelmed. So I decided to concentrate on women, no offense to the men, mm-hmm. but it was for my own sanity to just be able not to feel too much stress to try and figure stuff out. So
nice.
It's super interesting though. Like,
thank you.
We need to get into fandom because just before we hit record, I kind of had to say, hey, you two, stop your talking about Lost. I want all of this recorded.
It was going to happen. Always going
to
happen.
But, you know, obviously, if you listen to this podcast, you know that Tom had a fair bit to do with Lost on different types of media, digital media.
Yes.
So mainly like forums and stuff like that, right?
Yeah. So we started things off. Lost obviously started back in 2004. 2005 is where I came into the picture and we were running message boards. The first person in Australia to use social media for content promotion and advertising and stuff like that, things we were doing on MySpace, LiveJournal, Friendster. Then we moved into Facebook and all this sort of stuff. But yeah, I ran alternate reality games or ARGs between seasons 2 and 3, 3 and 4, and wrote for the official site and all this sort of stuff. So talking with another person who understands fandom is very exciting.
Like, this was all before Twitch. This was all before any of, like, you had to be like uber nerd to really get into, I think I think it's really Lost that began, where people went outside of their way. This is even before Twitter.
Yes. So right? If anyone else knows about this stuff in terms of timeline things, we were after I Love Bees, which was an ARG campaign promoting Halo 2, which was one of the first large-scale public exposure campaigns of this, but we were the first one for a television show or any sort of mainstream media that was being put out on commercial networks and stuff like that. So, yeah, we gained an awful, awful lot of interest, especially because our content was largely, I'll say, curated, not necessarily produced, but curated or proposed to us by the writing staff of the show itself. And we filled in a lot of gaps that they, you know, without having a scientist walk up on the beach and explain things, we were able to fill in a lot of behind the scenes stuff, talk about the conspiracies around the weird hippie science company that was doing stuff on the island and what they were doing back in the 70s, all this stuff. And it formed this fantastic community. And that's what I most remember about my time with Lost is that, yeah, it was really fun to go and interview people and write all the theories, but it was way more fun after I'd written a 3,000 word thing to chuck it up and then spend the next 4 hours going through comments and having discussions with people and stuff like that. And we didn't have proper, you know, there wasn't proper comment threads. You just put your thing there, it submitted it into a queue. And so you'd answer something from someone two pages before. And so it was great.
The creators of the show said that sometimes they, if I'm not mistaken, that they would go into these message boards and people were like, I think this is purgatory. I think this is that. And then they kind of were like, we kind of took that stuff when we were having to finish the show. Is that true?
I wouldn't say so much they took stuff. They went and kind of verified that what they were hoping for was not the most commonly thought out theory. Do you know what I mean? So they could avoid a few pitfalls and pit holes of very commonly believed assumptions and dance around that. There's no instances of things that I know exactly were lifted, but there are things that definitely inspired lines of dialogue.
Oh, cool.
Okay.
And some Sawyer nicknames that might have come directly from the fuselage and things like that. So the fuselage was the main one that was set up by, I won't say his name, but the guy who was kind of the script supervisor for the show, and he was in charge of the law, L-O-R-E law, for the program. So it kind of made sense that he set up this message board where everyone could go in depth, and he would jump in from time to time and maybe steer people the right way or sometimes even steer them the wrong way. But yeah, that whole fan audience interaction thing, that was all very new and fresh as well. Yeah. And there were a lot of them that weren't interested in doing that stuff at all. But Hurley, like Jorge, one of the nicest guys in the world.
Oh, good to know.
I can show you later. I have a photo of him, him and I out in a nightclub at the very end of a night.
Nice. Oh yeah, I want to know all the good.
Oh, he's a good.
This person's nice. This person is an introvert.
I will say the person who is least like their character was Michael Emerson, who played Ben Linus.
Good to know.
The leader
That's
of the
That's a
others.
Good thing.
He was so charming and comfortable and relaxing every time, But the second you made eye contact with him, your skin twitched a little bit. It was really hard to separate.
Somebody saw him in New York because now he was doing person of interest. Yeah. And they're like, it freaked me out so bad.
He does have those eyes though. They kind of.
He knows how to work them.
Yeah, for sure.
Give me the creeps.
So I will happily tell you people that I thought were great. And then when we're off the air, I'll tell you the one person that really wasn't.
Okay, fantastic. Oh, please, I'm very excited.
It's not Locke, is it? Because he was my favorite.
Gosh, no. But he didn't really do interviews. There were a few of them were outside the promotional bubble. And that's fair enough. He was much older than everybody else. Yeah. He wasn't interested in doing all that shit.
Okay, sure. Yeah. We're talking about Lost and it being, you know, the show that kind of kicked off. Yeah. And then we've just had WandaVision where we were just talking earlier about, you know, fans going, it's not fair. My fan theory wasn't the
Where was Mephisto?
My finale.
Where are the mutants?
You know, we also did see that with Game of Thrones as well. Everybody had such amazing finale theories.
I will say one of the highlights for me with Game of Thrones, especially the finale, was the fan fiction that came out of it. I mean, some of the endings that fans wrote, I was like, that's brilliant.
Yep.
I loved a lot of them. One was like a theory that, what's her name? Cersei is pregnant. We find out in, spoiler alert for everyone who hasn't watched it. The books aren't out yet. Yeah. But we all knew from the book, it's not in the show, that she will only have three children, their crowns will be gold, they will be in trial or whatever. So why is she pregnant with the fourth one? And there was a fan theory that said, this is what I think it will happen. She will die giving birth to a stillborn. So Jaime, the younger brother, will still have killed her because it's his baby.
Sure.
It's kind of, you kept blaming Tyrion for killing your mother and you'll die the same way she did. And three, it's stillborn, meaning you still had only three children.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's awesome. And then you go into this and I'm like, yeah, they didn't do that.
I
like this guy's theory.
had some bricks fall on them. But the parallels that I can see with WandaVision and Game of Thrones is that week to week, we all got to come together, chat about what we thought would be a good ending, what these fan theories were. And we were almost setting ourselves up for disappointment.
That's the thing. Theorizing lends itself to taking the narrative in different ways. And what you always forget generally is that as a theorizer, you are not a showrunner, and a showrunner is all about Occam's razor. They need to use the simplest path to get to the conclusion.
Did you guys, two things. Again, with Game of Thrones, there was that petition for them to rewrite the whole last season.
That was wild.
And for us, like not just people who work in media knew that, and they're like, no, you can't
do that
willy-nilly.
Everyone's
right?
moved on.
It was a miracle Gilmore Girls got a proper ending because Amy Sherman-Palladino never got to say the last four words that she always wanted the characters to say, right? And now she has.
Mm. Were those four words, let's go for coffee?
No. Oh, that is good. Mom, yeah, I'm pregnant. I have another podcast that I do purely for fun. It's called Discussing Divas. And it's my friends and I watch or talk about our favorite television shows. And one that I did with a friend is Game of Thrones. And I said, the whole point of it was people wanted it to be finished in a certain way. And I said, I think everyone did their job right, except for the writers and the creators of the show. And to give them a little bit, I can see where they're coming from. I don't approve of it, but they are so exhausted. Yeah. I mean, almost every season they kept saying, we're going to cancel it. It's too expensive. They're like, we just need to get to this point. George finally gave us the secrets, you know, all that stuff. Let's get it done. And they're finally at the finish line and they're like, let's just make it this way. And so we can just go and be with our families.
Yep.
And I think that's where it went wrong. And I'm like, and you can't necessarily force two grown men and their staff to sit back to make the ending you want it to be made.
It is very unusual.
Everyone else who did their job right. Yeah. I mean, the actress did a great job. The costuming, the set, the special effects, everyone did a great job. I didn't think that the long night was that dark, but you know, whatever. so So it was interesting because also in the digital age, there's this sense of ownership where you're like, how dare you not do what I want you to do? Because we can do so much with the internet that it's hard for people to function that another human being hasn't their own life kind of thing. And the world revolves around us now, that how can it not revolve? This point can't. And that was something that I kind of studied in graduate school and focused it on a theory called parasocial relationships. I don't know. Do you guys know about
this? Fill us in.
Okay. So parasocial relationship, para meaning one-sided, it's when a person starts forming a one-sided relationship with the media, right? And it started in the 1950s when television really came about in most people's living rooms. Because with radio, similar to podcasting, why podcasting isn't all that new, it was radio before. Radio, you have the audio, right? Now, with the visual, you had audio and seeing. So you had two senses, right? And people would start forming a relationship with their television screens. Sure. So if their nightly news anchor was sick in the 50s or the 60s and a sub came, people would send soup to the studio because the news anchor was sick. And for them, it was like a friend who I'd welcome every night. My family and I sit down and learn from them. They're telling us the news, our local and our national, whatever it is, news. And you're sick and I'm worried for you, right? But the news anchor doesn't know who you are. The studio doesn't know who you are. They only know about it because they get paid, and that's because you paid for it, right? kind of thing.
Yeah.
But that's where, and so they say it's one-sided.
Yeah.
As soon as you start making yourself known, it's no longer one-sided. So when they would go to a signing or send soup to the studio or something, then Horton and Wool are the scientists that kind of develops this theory, said it's no longer parasocial. But it hasn't really been updated since the 50s and 60s. There's been a couple of more research in the 80s and stuff. But so when I was in graduate school, I graduated in 2017, and I realized I learned about this because, you know, when I remember I was telling my dad, I was like, Dad, I know what I want to make my Independence Day, my thesis about, my last semester, about parasocial relationship. And I was explaining, I'm like, when you form a relationship with the media, but it's really one-sided. And he goes, oh, so you're writing your autobiography?
Thanks, Dad.
Thank you, Daddy. You're welcome for never having, like, you never had to worry about me getting drunk and like, whatever. I was like a loser, but I was a good kid. But it was interesting because with it, I was like, so now, and we talked a little about it with Lost being one of the first, if not the first show, that a fan can go not only connect with other fans, but they could go, hey, creators of the show, hey, actors, hey, writers of the show, I love what you're doing. This is what I think should happen. This is what my theory is. And then the show can respond back.
Yep.
Right. Yep. So under the parasocial relationship, the fact that we even message you, or in today's age, like we could tweet it out, technically that's no longer parasocial because we made yourself known. I argue that it still is until they respond back. Right.
Sure. Yeah.
And that's technically not the original definition, but because of the digital age, the technology and internet, just because, like, for instance, I'll give you this, example is there was a couple ones, but one is Tony Hale, I think his name is.
From Arrested Development. Yeah.
Yes. Love him. So I tweeted to him just for fun. I went, Tony, at Tony Hale, I think you always steal the show. You're always the greatest part of it, whether it's Veep or Arrested Development, or Because I Said So, which is not a very good rom-com movie.
He stole Harley Quinn, the animated series. He plays.
He's in it.
Yeah, he plays Dr. Psycho, and he's the worst.
Really? The one with.
It's so good. Yeah.
Yeah. That one.
I started it, and I feel like because I don't expect cartoons to be so violent and talk that way. I'm like, whoa.
Episode three.
So, but I want to get this.
Episode three, the emotional story starts coming in. And by the end of season two, oh, it is the best coming out story. Oh.
Okay, so that doesn't surprise me, isn't it? Yeah. But like so I tweeted to him. Now, Horton and Wool would say, okay, so no longer parasocial. You let yourself know. And you, Tara, made Tony know about you. Now, could be his assistant, could be like one shot. But he tweeted back to me saying, oh, thank you so much. That's so sweet, right? That probably doesn't mean a lot to him. Maybe it does. But it. What I was like, oh, my God, Tony.
Yeah, totally.
Right? So now I would argue it's no longer parasocial.
I would agree.
He's responded to me.
Yeah.
Somebody responded to me on his behalf, if anything. Right. Because so, there's an argument that he might have an assistant or something like that.
Sure.
You've got me thinking of something to extend that out further. What's your feeling? And where do you think Cameo falls within this? Mm. Of where you can pay for a celebrity to record a message to you or someone, but they're still not, it's a personal message, but there's still no actual interaction.
Yeah.
Where does that kind of fall?
It's so interesting because that's also nothing really new, because that's like the autograph, isn't it?
Yeah.
It really is.
Yep.
Autograph or leaving a message on someone's answering machine or.
Yeah. Even during the times of, so for instance, we know media does have an impact on people's lives because when the show I Love Lucy, mm-hmm. are you guys familiar with I Love Lucy?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Because a lot of people weren't, that upset me. but I Love Lucy was a really popular show, one of the beginnings, family show in the 50s. Crime went down, at least in the United States, on Monday nights because I Love Lucy was airing. Even criminals were like, we're off. We got to watch what did Lucy do to Ricky this time and all that stuff. So people really do respond. We like these stories. And like what I was telling a little earlier, the reason why I really liked Lost, especially the first three seasons, is because we could get to know these characters, right? You were rooting. You're like, how is, I was just listening to the original score a couple of days ago and Lost pops up because I like listening to original scores of shows and
music. Yeah, right.
And it's the one where Kate gets married.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And I'm just remembering that. Like, we're like, she was married.
Nathan Fillion.
Nathan Fillion.
I was there when they filmed that.
No way.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I got to hang out with Fillion for a day and a half.
Living the life, okay. Right?
He was a bigger Lost
one. He
was a bigger Lost nerd than I was.
Okay.
Oh, that's cute.
He was
that's
so fun. Excited to be there, like doing these.
So, but like, we have these like moments where we're really, you know, I always thought like, I don't know if I still have it, but one of my bios in my social media is like, I'm part Kate from Lost. I'm part Liz Lemon from 30 Rock. Like, this is how I define myself.
I agree. Right? Yep.
Back in the 1950s, if you saw Lucille Ball or Desi Arnaz, the stars and creators of the show, you'd be like, I'm sorry, could I get an autograph? You know what I mean? Here, now, we could just be like, hey, Nathan Fillion, it's my mom's birthday and she loves you. Could you please like send her a tweet or something like that? Something. Or if I just want to tell Tony Hale, you tend to be the supporting actor, but honestly, you steal a show. And there's also the negative aspects of it where people can just like shit on each other.
I'm going to be as rude to this famous person as I want to because there are no repercussions for me.
Exactly. Yep. And that is a whole other realm that has its own dangers, just as much as it can, you know, musicians, first of all, music and sports, the fandoms in those two genres or something. Oh my goodness. I was like, I can't handle this. I can't. It was so much. I was a baby, but when Kurt Cobain died, 6 feet under, the television show like remembers that point. They kind of show it, but people were heartbroken.
Yeah.
Like it was your own buddy who died, right? Because Kurt Cobain wrote, so music touches us like nothing else. Sports, for a lot of people, they really want their sports teams to win.
They're the heroes.
And sport is a religion.
Yeah,
it is. It really is.
It's so tribal, and, you know, you find your core group and you all barrack for the same team and fuck them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. And you can't stand the other team and you're like, I can't get into it. So for me, I was like, I'm not even going to touch it because I can't really understand.
Have you ever dipped your toe into the world of wrestling?
No. And I've spoken to a couple of other podcasts and blogs and there's I'm starting to write for them called thegameofnerds.com. Yep. Mm-hmm. So I got in touch with them and I'm going to start writing for them.
Awesome.
And all that stuff. But Shannon, who started Game of Nerds, was saying, we had to stop doing wrestling because there was so much common sense. So like, I don't remember exactly, but I think it might've broken down their website.
It,
but
there it was wouldn't surprise a lot me.
People got so passionate about it. They're like, I can't believe you said this about this guy and all that stuff. And she is more like no trolls policy.
Sure.
Right? No asshole policy. And she was like, not with wrestling. It's it was too just much. Too much. We couldn't control it.
Wrestling has this idea of kayfabe that Leah and I have talked about a lot, which is the outward expression and illusion of reality. And yet behind the scenes, everyone plays along. And that has weirdly, over the last 20 years, ever since they admitted it was sports entertainment, kayfabe has infected the fandom. And you've got a section of fandom who refuse to admit that kayfabe is a thing. It's, you know, I'm sure you've seen that video of that. It's all real to me, damn it.
Yeah,
like guys that are that passionate about it. And then you've got the other side of guys who just want to talk about the industry behind the scenes and they piss off the guys that don't want to talk about that. So I know exactly what you're talking about with warring factions.
Yeah.
It's not even this is the best wrestler. It's how you speak about wrestling as an entity, whether you're reverent for it, whether you use the F word, which is fake. They don't like that.
And you can't do that.
It's not fake. It's scripted.
And then going to your original question about when somebody pays for somebody in the media to do a personalized message, it's quite interesting because I also think of comic cons.
Yep.
Paying where like photos.
You wait in line, you'll pay and you can get your photograph taken with you. And usually it's on-screen talent because that's who you see. Right.
And in that you're paying money and also time of lining up and queuing up. So you're giving two pretty important commodities to this person.
And I reached out to a couple of cons. I got into Awesome Con to talk about my study. I gave the suggestion that it needs to be updated, parasocial relationships for the digital age. And they liked it and stuff. And I want to continue that because I also am starting some sort of independent research, mostly with influencers, because I think that's a really fascinating thing. Because it's a whole new other realm. They're not actors. They're not writers. You are a fan of them living their life.
Yep.
And when does it turn off? Like, what do you not share? What do you do share? If somebody sees you in the store and they can recognize you, safety issues that come with it, all sorts of stuff. Anyway, so I went to Awesome Con and I came with a pass and I could have a couple of guests. So some of my friends came for mine and I'm like, then here's our pass. We didn't have to pay to go to Awesome Con unless you wanted to get a photo or like one-on-one time with a talent. But going into their Q&A, and stuff, we didn't actually have to pay to go to that, right? You waited in line, it's first come, first serve, or maybe whatever it was. I remember I saw, is it Jason Isaac, his name, from Harry Potter and the OA and all that stuff.
Hmm.
He was there, they did a Princess Bride Q&A with Cary Elwes and Sarandon guy,
Is it Chris? No.
I think it's Christopher Sarandon, and they shared stories and stuff. And then I would go to other side meetings similar to mine, which is like they're not necessarily famous, but they have a concentration on it, all that stuff. So that was really fun. But I was like, and people are in line waiting to take a photo, and like you might get 2 minutes with Christopher Sarandon and Cary Elwes and. You can find particularly, you know, we're talking about WandaVision, like Marvel fans and all that stuff. Like they'll be like, Bucky, Mr. Sebastian Stan, could you like pretend you're proposing to me? Mm-hmm. And he'll be like, yeah, sure. Yeah. And all that stuff. And for the, I'm curious. That's why I like talking to influencers, because it's a little easier than the actual act. I have reached out to actors and writers and they're not so welcome. Yeah. Because they don't know who I am. Mm. But it's interesting when I'm like, how is it for you as the talent, when somebody asks you for something, do you remember them? Mm. Do you not? Because that's the thing why I think parasocial relationship or fandoms have changed so drastically in this technological age, digital age, is within the palm of our hands. Mm. We watch them. You're watching them right before you go to sleep. You can watch them first thing in the morning. There's no break, really, mm-hmm. especially during quarantine and lockdown in the last year.
Yeah.
It's heightened. So when I was like, can you imagine if you're watching WandaVision and you're catching it up and you're at the airport when travel will be more normal, God willing. But you're there and all of a sudden you look up and you're like, oh my gosh, it's Elizabeth Olsen. It's Paul Bettany. And you're like,
I. Yeah, that's
and
wild.
How do you, especially for children, there's a couple of interviews that I've read, particularly like with High School Musical, mm-hmm. whether it's the films or the series. And they've said, I've been yelled at the airport. And they're like, you have to take a photo with my kid. I've spent so much money on you.
Yep.
And they're like, I'm sorry, I'm going to an airport.
Yeah, like, I'm not. Now. Yeah, this is, I'm not on.
Even the parents forget that I know you pay for your subscription to this streaming service and this this iPad and all that stuff, whatever it is. And you finally see the person in real life and you're like, the kid.
I'm taking this opportunity.
Like, yeah. You want to take that. You also have to have this kind of, hey, you're an adult. Remember that they have their own line. They already got their paycheck.
Yeah.
They enjoyed their time. They appreciate yours, but they don't owe you anything.
They don't. And I think that that's difficult for people to realize.
Yeah.
So I think if you haven't yet, you are going to experience your own form of this soon, because as a podcaster, have you had anyone come up to you and continue a conversation they weren't in?
No, but I will love that if that happens.
Believe me, Leah and I can tell you it's going to start happening to you. We have people coming up and talking to us about stuff that we spoke about last week. And I'll be honest, second we finish recording, once he's the edit's done, remember. I don't remember. Yeah. But someone will come up and be like, make a joke, like following on with something I made last week. And you're, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
So I think you're going to start having a bit of your own insight to this sort of stuff.
I think you're giving me too much credit for it. But
even from family and friends.
Yeah, but I would also be like, now, when did you last listen to that? Or why did you remember? You were just listening to it? Or like, was it a last week? Why are you so intrigued by it?
Yeah.
I'd go back into my academic route and be like, can I interview you? You're fascinating.
Look, this has been super fascinating, and unfortunately our time is running out. But once again, where can people listen to you, follow you, I don't know, be slightly annoying in your direction?
Oh, please do. So the podcast is Who Was She? We're on Instagram, Facebook, and Pinterest at Who Was She Podcast.
Cool.
We're on all the major listening streaming platforms. Yep. And mine is Tara_Jabari on Twitter and Instagram and all that stuff.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I don't know about you, Tom, but I reckon we're going to need to continue this conversation.
I think so.
Yeah.
I would love it. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye.